The Movies, Films, and Flicks podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/shark. Over 150,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Movies, Films, and Flicks, the podcast about movies, films, and... It's on the tip of my tongue. Someone help me?
Flicks.
I was about to say Kurt Russell. Well, actually, it's also about Kurt Russell.
We discuss Kurt Russell more than we discuss flicks.
Should we just call it Movies, Films, and Kurt Russell? Or how about Movies, Kurt Russell, and Kurt Russell?
Movies, Films, and Sleeveless.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. let me introduce my co-host, Mark Hoffmeyer.
Hey, guys. Since we're on Skype and you can see me on the video call, does this eye patch look better on my left eye, or does the eye patch look better on my right eye?
It depends on if Captain Ron is napping or not.
That's true.
So I'm awake. So what do you guys think? Left or right eye, this eye patch should go on?
Put it on your left eye again.
There it is.
Okay. Now move it to your right eye.
Okay. It's on my right eye.
All right.
Feeling a little more Kurt Russell-iness on this side.
Okay. Oh, here's a question. Do you have a second eye patch? I want to see an eye patch on both eyes. See what that looks like.
Let me grab it. Okay. All right. So what do you think?
All right. No, I think I like this. Can you see anything right now?
No, just the pictures of Kurt Russell I put in on the thing there.
Personal opinion? I think you should go with both eye patches.
I like it.
All right.
I think it'll be tough to walk for a couple days, but I'll figure it out.
Yeah, you'll adapt. John Levingood, how many eye patches are you going with?
I'm going with none for me. I'm not an eye patch kind of guy because I have glasses. It'll look funny. It'll look like weird goggles.
You can't just
I'll look like Dr. Horrible, like Neil Patrick Harris.
You can't just black out your eyeglasses there.
I think it's just Dr. Horrible again at that point, or they're sunglasses. Then they're just sunglasses.
All right, guys, like we do at the beginning of every Movies, Films, and Flicks, we like to start off with listener questions. John Levingood, I think you have the listener questions this week, right?
Yes, I do. And I was harvesting those questions from Twitter. And these questions, of course, are all about horror because the rest of our podcast is not. And our first question comes from Twitter with @DemonScribblers. And Demon Scribblers asks... Do zombies poop?
Now, I know you're laughing, you're thinking it's random, but if you go on Google and you write, do zombies, I think the top thing is, do zombies poop? I mean, Grantland, all the major markets, Max Brooks, who wrote the Zombie Survival Guide, World War Z, talks about this. I mean, this is debated in forums ever since I read this question. But for me, this is what I think. Zombies die, right? They have the initial burst. You know, they have the thing that happens when you die.
Right.
And then they just walk around. There's nothing working inside their body.
But they're consuming things. Things go in their mouth and get shoved down their throat.
Yeah.
So if you don't digest them and have them work their way out, then eventually the zombie will literally fill up and they can't put anything in their mouth because their mouth is full.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think they eat so much flesh that it just pops out of them.
Yeah.
So maybe we just never see any zombies that have been eating enough people successfully before getting shot. That they've reached that saturation point.
Yeah, no, let's Night of the Living Dead, right? They found the truck, they ate the people in the truck, but it was just one body and it was like 30 zombies. Like, that's just a couple chicken wings. You know, that's us. That's us. That's us splitting a 8-piece chicken. You know, so it's
I'm not splitting 8-piece chicken. I'm sorry.
Exactly. So they're splitting an 8-piece chicken.
Yeah.
I think, you know, if they get too full, something will pop out, I'm sure. But when in zombie movies have you tell me this, aside from iZombie, I know in those books the zombies poop, but in what zombie movie have you ever seen zombie poop?
Well, I think it's just not socially acceptable to show the pooping on screen.
Yeah,
but exactly. There's been hundreds of them. There's been hundreds of zombie films. No poop.
Hey, I've never seen a lot of actors poop.
Hey, the proof is in the pooping. That's all I'm saying.
The proof is in the pooping.
See, so, I like to think
so
that.
I just have to have to wonder for a second, because there are different kinds of zombies. Right. And so in the Night of the Living Dead series, the Romero series, it's kind of like the hell is full theological supernatural zombie. In the Return of series, they're chemically induced reanimation. And then, like, you have all these movies where it's a virus. Or in even The Walking Dead, it's a virus. And in 28 Days Later, it's a virus. So the virus, the viral zombies, presumably they're pooping, but then they're almost not zombies.
But they don't eat, though. Like, the 28 Days Later ones just beat people up and spit blood on them. And then the World War Z just bite people. Like, they don't eat. They just jump on people and turn them and want to turn as many people as possible.
Right. Well, then the Walking Dead zombies, though. Those are viral zombies.
Hmm. Yeah, that, nah. I don't think so.
See, the thing is...
You don't think they poop?
Nah.
No, the thing is, I disagree. I do think zombies poop. You know, I think they just don't show in the movies, right? I think they just have... They have, like, their... This sounds bad, but I think they have their own special zombie bathrooms, right? Because we're not a progressive enough culture to accept zombies in our bathrooms.
We're living in an era of zombie segregation.
Exactly. Exactly. Like, they get their own special bathrooms. They get their own special fountains. But I think zombies, they poop. They sit down a toilet. They just, you know, read a magazine, like Zombie Weekly, right? I don't know what's...
Isn't it like Fido, that movie Fido, or Warm Bodies?
Yeah. I don't know.
Well, the zombies in Warm Bodies had to live in their own airport because they were being harassed so much.
Yeah.
And then they came back to life. So at that point, they pooped, but they weren't zombies anymore.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't see it. But there's so many different types of zombies. Who knows? Some do, some don't. You know, there's different zombies.
Well, anytime you've ever seen a zombie movie and a zombie attacks the main character when they're in the bathroom, how do you know that zombie was in the middle of something and he was pissed that he got interrupted? Like, yo!
That's the worst place to stumble into a zombie hive.
I know. Right in the middle of the zombie bathroom.
You don't belong here. So, John, did you answer it, John? What do you think?
Well, I don't know. Like, my answer is dependent on the kind of zombie, because I really want to go with that children's book, which I wish was around when I was a kid, Everybody Poops. But then it's like, you know, some zombies aren't really an everybody, they're a thing. They're an everything, and not everything poops. If I'm taking notes with a pencil, the pencil doesn't poop. But you know, like, so if I was an apocalypse virus zombie, I'd probably poop, but I'm sort of still alive. But if I'm one of those George Romero zombies, I'm gonna guess I'm just gonna get full and eventually can't shove any more food in me because my system isn't working. I'm not secreting digestive enzymes.
And the one in World War Z, all their blood turns to like black goo, and their insides just sort of solidify. Ugh. So it's like
a walking case of sepsis.
Yeah. But guys, I know you at home you're wondering why we're talking about this, but just type in on Google "do zombies poop" and everything pops up. Like this is like any Romero conference. This is a subject that people talk about. So we answered it definitively here first.
I don't think – did we answer it definitively?
We definitively answered all of the possible definite avenues of answers.
It doesn't sound very definitive since you put it that way.
We answered 60% of 100%, but we believe it 100%.
It's definitively indefinitive.
I think the person who asked this question – I think the listener who asked this question is going to be even more confused after listening to our answers.
Hopefully they will be so distracted high-fiving it that we mentioned Demon Scribblers on the podcast that they'll forget the fact that we didn't totally answer it. Thank you, Demon Scribblers, for that question. It's a fun one. We could probably stretch a whole podcast out of it, but this was just our listener segment. I do have one other question right now from Isaac's Haunted Beard or Isaac's Haunted Bee on Twitter. And he asks, does Jason believe in God? Jason Voorhees from the Friday the 13th movies. And that got me extending that question to, does Jason believe in anything? Or does Jason think or just have some drive?
So I always thought he was a Scientologist.
Going clear. In the first few movies, I think no. I think he's just like a walking thing. But then he ends up going to hell. And then that Jason goes to hell, he's like this weird squibby thing that goes into people's ears, right? And then turns them, like, it's his soul. He has a demonic soul that gets other people. They have to eat hearts, don't they?
That's right. Yeah.
So he's demonic in that. So he came from hell, and then at the end of that, he gets dragged into hell, and then in Jason, Freddy vs. Jason, they're both in hell. So obviously, Jason, I think if Jason knows enough to have his demonic spirit go ear to ear and eat people's hearts, he knows there's something. He knows there's a god.
Well, he's in hell. In the evolution of Jason, Jason had evolved a lot at that point. And in fact, Jason's heart, after they did the autopsy, and it was the I can't think of his name. But he played the character, I think the character's name was Griff, and Married with Children, who worked at the shoe store with Al Bundy. So this dude, he's the mortician, and he has Jason's heart on a platter. And Jason's heart kind of whispers, like, and so it's like Jason, like a demon in a possession movie, was trying to influence his surroundings. So, yeah, in that movie, Jason had clearly evolved to an advanced state of anything that he ever was in the earlier movies. In the early movies, I feel like he was a haunting that had a physical form, almost like a haunted house movie, but instead of some incorporeal ghost or a house that performed telekinetic actions, it was like he was just a memory of vengeance. And so he just acted on that memory of vengeance. In the same way we pull our hand away from something that's hot because it hurts without thinking about it, I think that he saw teenage campers at Camp Crystal Lake and just reactively tried to kill them.
Yeah, that's all that was on his mind, was kill promiscuous teenagers. And then he became a heart that wanted you to eat it.
And then he became a heart that went, or in a tadpole that went in your ear.
Sounds like a natural
progression. If I was sitting there, though, and a heart was like, me, I'd be like, no. But if it was like, hey, man, what are you up to later? You want to go catch a movie? You know, if he became friends with you, and he's like, later, man, hey,
can you look a little hungry. Yeah. So, yo, man, you look a little hungry. I got you, if you are.
Yo, man, you got a grill? Let's fire up that grill and have a Corona. Yeah. Oh, wait, now the grill's going? Why don't you throw me on with some fajita seasoning and get some sriracha sauce, and, you know, we'll have a good time.
Yeah. Well, that, you know, this, yeah, he could have been so much more persuasive. Like,
yeah,
just, you know, I don't want to be bullied. I'd be like, you can't bully me, little evil heart. You know, like, become friends with me, then let me eat you in the fajita. Like, build to it. It's like we were talking about Wishmaster on the pod, and if you guys have listened to our prior pods, but the Wishmaster makes all of his wishes go horribly wrong for the person. But then on his third wish, if the person asks for it, he can bring hell on earth. But if I was Wishmaster, and some guy was like, I want $10 million, I'd be like, hey, here's $10 million. If he was like, I want a Maserati with monster truck wheels, hey, here's a Maserati with monster truck wheels. I want the world's largest ice cream cone. Here it is. Hell on earth.
Hell on earth. And now your ice cream cone is melted.
Yeah. So, like, but I would never key into him that I was bad. I would just be like, yeah, take it. Yeah, take it. You want that? Sure. All right. Yeah, sure. Take it. Like, I would bring my army to Earth faster than I would bring Jason up.
But I think that genie was stuck given the wishes that way. And so what he'd do is he'd make the wish gone wrong have an ill effect on something else that they cared about or someone else they loved, so they'd be forced to make another wish to save them.
I don't like it.
Yeah, that's kind of like it. That's not like going it. In the remake. Lizabeth, do you have any feelings about Jason's beliefs or ability to think and therefore believe?
I just imagine him as like kind of a new wave type of hippie, you know, like maybe he's a Buddhist. I don't know. I don't like maybe he's been to hell. He's been dead before. He's been reincarnated, I guess. I don't know. Maybe he's just a Buddhist. Like, I think that would be appropriate. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, you don't have to believe in Buddhism to be reincarnated.
No, I guess not. What other religion could we shoehorn Jason into? Mormonism.
LDS Mormonism, polygamy. Not all Mormons are. That's not what I'm saying. But like the Big Love TV show kind of Mormons that have the multiple wives. That's Jason.
Yeah. He needs multiple wives because he's probably always killing people.
He keeps killing them.
Yeah. I don't know.
He's got to have a few on deck.
How does he always pull these girls if they know they're going to get killed?
Well, hey, what's the religion that
it's
I
like
guess...
It's like the bad boy. You know, the bad boy. Like,
yeah, girls love the bad boy.
He might kill me, but he's got an edge to him.
Maybe I can change him.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I have a little project now.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to change my man without him knowing it.
But before we dive too deep into Jason's religion... Anything else on this?
No, I think we covered it. Thanks to Isaac's Haunted Beard for that question.
All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Levengood, for those questions. All right. Now that we're done with those listeners' questions, I think it's time to move on to the meat of this sandwich. And, Mark, I think you're in charge of the pastrami this week, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we just got one slab of marble rye done. Right. Now I'm going to load us up, you know, with the meat, then we'll end with another slice of marble rye. And we're not saying the bread's not good. You know, we need the bread for a sandwich. Otherwise, it's just a big hunk of meat.
But I'm gonna, later I'll add to this analogy with more deli metaphors as well.
I'm really hungry right now, just to let you guys know.
So the other day I was watching the Jurassic World preview, and there's a moment in it where this giant sea beast jumps out of this tank and grabs a shark and eats it. And then he flops back in the water and the waves splash the people in the stands. It's kind of like the dolphin show or Shamu show at SeaWorld. And I was watching it and I was just thinking how terribly planned out it was. I was like, what if this sea beast jumped a little bit to the right, landed on the stands and just killed 1,000 people? Like, this thing is huge and it's probably like a mile long tank. It's not safe at all. So it just kind of led me from one thing to the other of just doing what ifs. And, you know, so many podcasts deal with certainties and analyze films. I think it's more fun when you take films you love and add something to them. You know, what if this happens? I think that's a key ingredient in a lot of cinema. What if this happened? So for me, I put together some really random questions like we always do. And I sent them to you guys and I want to talk about them on this pod.
I can't wait.
So
all right, let's kick it off.
The first question is, what if Predator was remade? Now, we live in a world where we're past everything's going to be remade, so it's not even worth complaining about. So we might as well, I mean, we can complain about it, but it's coming. Like, it's winter is coming, and Ned Stark will be decapitated. So,
what if,
sorry, John, I know you're reading the books. What if Predator was remade? And so, what cast would you do? So I put together my dream team, and I want to run it by you guys. So, taking Carl Weathers and Arnold Schwarzenegger spots would be Chris Evans and Terry Crews.
Oh, I like it.
Interesting. Now, Chris Evans, you know, he's Captain America. He can do the bicep shot. Terry Crews is the funniest dude alive. If you watch Brooklyn Nine-Nine, the guy is hilarious. So they're the heads. And then add Timothy Oliphant and Walton Goggins from Justified, as two of the guys are probably going to get decapitated, but they're pithy and they're great. Add Michael Jai White, Gina Carano, Michael Pena. Michael Pena was in Fury. He's in End of Watch. Fantastic actor. Add Sung Kang, who played
Han Solo.
Han Solo in the Fast movies. Yep. And then Genesis Rodriguez as the person they pick up. So you got these great actions. See, for me, this isn't the 80s anymore with big biceps and steroids. We're not in that era anymore. So I kind of cast a smaller crew, but I still think these guys would be perfect for this role.
That's interesting.
I like it. I feel like there's a little bit of clash with the hugely muscled dudes with Terry Crews and Michael Jai White. But I mean, one's funny and one's serious and one's martial artsy and one's just big flexy smiles.
Yeah.
But like might they clash a little bit?
No, because Terry Crews is awesome. Terry Crews would have that big gun. Everybody would love him. This, you know, it wouldn't be as quippy and one-liner. These guys would be more three-dimensional. So I think they would get along great. I think Terry Crews and Chris Evans would have great banter. I'd love to see Michael Jai White hanging out with, like, Gina Carano and Sung Kang. I think they'd be awesome together. I think all these guys just have chemistry. And Walton Goggins was already in Predators. He was, like, that weird prisoner in there. So, you know, he can already battle Predators. So he's already set for this role. It would finally showcase Michael Jai White could be the Billy role waiting for a predator on the tree.
Hmm.
Oh, yeah.
So Mark, I want to ask you this question then. Who, out of all those people you mentioned, who would be the last person standing against the Predator?
Chris Evans.
Chris Evans?
Yeah. Really? Chris Evans would be the last. It would come down to Terry Crews and Chris Evans and Genesis Rodriguez.
Okay.
Terry Crews would actually but this is the way I would do it. Terry Crews would get into a massive fight with the Predator, like mano a mano, right? Predator wins, but he's weakened. He loses his arm. Then he has to go over Chris Evans. We don't want to repeat all that mud stuff from before. So then they just have a massive twister battle, and Chris Evans wins.
Massive twister battle. I feel like the Predator would still have an advantage of that, right?
No, but he only has one arm, so he's done.
Oh, yeah, that's right. But wouldn't he just be more flexible? I don't know.
I've got a very different approach to this, all right? So, I want to see Arnold as Dutch again. Now, hear me out. Okay? Think The Last Stand. In The Last Stand, he was an old, big, tough guy, but he owned the old. There was some humility that came with being older. The ego was toned down from whatever he once was, right? So now Arnold as Dutch, the same exact character from the original Predator, the scenario could be that, like, the military present day identifies a series of incidents that match something that transpired in Guatemala in 1987 and then in 1990 in New York City. So they call up the only surviving military operative to survive that encounter 30 years ago to advise the team. And just like in Aliens compared to Alien with Sigourney Weaver, he has to get involved himself with the new when the new military team gets in over their heads thinking that a few automatic weapons and night vision goggles and a few grenades are going to solve their problems. And we can even give a minor role to Danny Glover as a retired New York City cop because he encountered it before. But because he's a cop and not in the military and he doesn't know what's going on, he sees the stuff going on TV and he's crying wolf because he thinks he knows what's happening. And everyone's doubting him and he sees Dutch on TV saying no comment. And then he gets a hold of him and then they work together. And it's like old guys being cool, but cooler than the Expendables, fewer guns and steroids.
Living good. Excuse me for saying so, but it sounds like you've already written this screenplay.
It is 96 pages.
You just went super detailed there. Like, you kind of went above and beyond the Call of Duty.
Like, I saw the whole thing. Like, you even talked to Danny Glover. Danny Glover's watching the TV, and then Arnold goes, no comment.
I feel like you already have the tagline, like, already, like, ready to go. Did you make the poster in Photoshop already?
But I started thinking about just Arnold reprising his role, and it just worked in my head because of how he handled himself in The Last Stand. I want to see this happen.
Last Stand, man. That's an underrated film. I love that movie.
If any producers are listening, I'm willing to talk to you about this. Okay. I'm claiming the idea right now, officially.
Can I get animation rights, at least on that?
You have animation rights.
Yes. Well, that'll be a mistake, my friend.
But that's my pitch. I wasn't really concerned with the other people in it. I was more concerned with thinking out the dynamic of how it would work. And I clearly got a little carried away.
Right. Just a little bit. No, that's good.
But what do you think of old Arnold and then later as an ancillary supportive character, old Danny Glover, but mostly old Arnold, playing the elderly version of Sigourney Weaver in Aliens? Like, I think it's a good parallel sequence.
Does he shoot a basketball behind his – does he throw a basketball not looking at the hoop and land it from half court? Does he throw an over-the-shoulder shot?
No, he throws a backwards
over – What he does do is slap Adrian Brody for ruining his movie. Yeah. I love Adrian Brody. He was fantastic in his made-for-TV movie about Houdini and many other things as well. But that movie, sorry, Adrian, bad call. It was a bad call, Adrian.
Yeah. So,
I'm digressing here, but when I was at FSU, I had a short-run movie radio show, and the company ended up going under, but we got some episodes in. Our first episode we did, we got in a lot of trouble because of Adrian Brody, because we were doing the Oscars talk, and this is in, I think, 2002, 2003, and my co-host, who you met at my wedding maybe, Doug, Slimy Doug, he sat there and he spent 10 minutes talking about The Pianist. And how big it was. I'm serious. He's like, the penis was a big hit. And I was just sitting there hating life, but yeah. I didn't really know how to do that. So that just brought back all those memories of my first radio show and how he hijacked it, talking about Adrian Brody.
We should have Doug come on sometime.
No! No!
No!
Sorry, Doug, if you're listening.
Okay. So I guess it's my turn now to... Yeah. It'll be hard to follow that really super detailed... answer Lemon Good gave, but I think all right. I didn't do a whole cast like Mark did. I think my approach to this is basically I want to see the Predator forced to use a different skill set, right? So when he's going up against like Arnold Schwarzenegger or Jesse Ventura or Carl Weathers, like it's basically who can outbro the other, right? basically
like chugging beers. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, just like who can shoot the most bullets at each other. I want to see the Predator have to use a different skill set, right? What if he was matched against someone like Benedict Cumberbatch, where he was like forced to engage in a battle of wits? Like how would the Predator do, really?
So what I'm thinking right now is a chess table, right?
Okay.
All right. So the camera zooms in on this chess. You know, some people playing chess, and one side is getting completely annihilated, right? I mean, it's almost all over. And then you pan up to Benedict Cumberbatch,
right?
And he puts his hand on the chess piece and he goes checkmate. And then you cut to the Predator going. Bah! And then he hits the chessboard, and then it all goes flying up in the air. And then Benedict Cumberbatch goes, not again.
And then he programs his self-destruct thing on his little wrist bracer.
I could just imagine, like, Benedict Cumberbatch is just strolling through the jungle. He stumbles across a clearing. He sees a chess table there. He just instinctually sits down. And then you see the Predator just uncloak. Like 5 yards away from him, and he just slowly sits down and he waits for Benedict Cumberbatch to make the first move.
worst use of invisibility ever. Yeah.
I mean, there would be like, I'm fixing like, you know, sweaty foreheads, like trembling moves, like a great like jazz score, like a Whiplash type score. And then halfway through it, this audience comes in.
Yeah. I think, so Benedict Cumberbatch against Predator in the battle of wits. I think another skill set that I want to see a Predator kind of engage in is how good are his dancing and singing abilities. What if he was matched against someone like, I don't know, Anna Kendrick? Like, what if the Predator was in a sing-off?
Bah, 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 bah. Well, he can mimic human voices, so he can listen to them. And
exactly.
Then he could
exactly.
Yeah. I got the magic in me.
Dude, if he has, like, GarageBand or some good DJ software on his little wristband thing, like, he might be able to rip up some good tunes.
He could actually be in Guar and nobody would notice.
Yeah. I'm saying right now, guys, I would never want to go up against Anna Kendrick in a sing-off. Like, she would just destroy anybody.
Oh, it's
right
done.
Now. Yeah.
I'm yelling, Timber, you better move.
Oh.
You better dance.
Right.
You can't beat Kendrick. So, all right. No, I'm happy with that. I think that what if was destroyed. Now, this one's kind of fun. My wife and I were talking about what if questions, Megan, and she said, what if Demi Moore did something other than pottery in Ghost? So you know that incredibly romantic scene in Ghost when it's Demi Moore and Patrick Swayze and they're making that pot and they're just like doing that. I don't know what the quite word is, but they're just, you know, they're molding clay. Like,
they're
what if
pottering,
she was? Yeah, pottering. They're pottering. They're molding. What if she was into something different and you cut to those scenes instead of them molding clay? Like, what if they went, what if she was really into noodling, which is like when you catch catfish in rivers? Or like LARPing, where like they cut to both of them dressed up as like medieval knights running through the forest and he's just miserable, but the Righteous Brothers are still playing and it's like this very romantic scene. So, I mean, like, what else? What if she was into something else? What else would you guys see?
Well, hold on. What if our listeners aren't as old as this movie? We should probably point out that this Demi Moore movie that maybe has some people scratching their heads is from, I think, 1990.
Yeah.
So this movie's about as old as a lot of our target audience. So, guys, just look up the movie. Trust us on this.
Well, basically what happens is Patrick Swayze dies. He comes back as a ghost. And he's watching his wife, but there's some really bad man kind of getting in her life. So he's just trying to protect her wife. He meets Whoopi Goldberg, who won an Oscar for the role.
And, as a medium. She's a medium.
Yeah, a medium. And so you have this really, you know, love story, all this amazing stuff. But instead of pottery, they're just out LARPing.
Yeah, great date movie for you young guys to impress a girl.
It's like the Notebook of the 90s.
So when you first said, what if she was into something else? And you gave your examples. I just started thinking, like what do people do now? What are people really into now? Because back then she had a hobby when we didn't have access to all this internet and online media stuff that we do now. So like nowadays, like what if she was really into Netflixing a show and she was in the middle of it? And so, like, and marathoning the show on Netflix. And so this guy has to start in the middle of season two of Orange is the New Black. And basically every time he tries to make a move, instead of the classic movie date night where you end up, you know, making out and not watching the movie, she's, like, slapping him. Like, stop. I need to know what happens. And he's just like, what? I don't care. I don't watch this show. So he has to learn to like the show for her. And then they just sit there quietly and nothing really happens
while the Righteous Brothers are playing.
Like, and the only other example I thought of for some reason was, what if she's into roller derby and like she gets him to go roller derbying with them, but instead of like Happy Gilmore where they have the cute ice skating scene, or all these other movies that have cute roller skating or ice skating scenes that are cute, like he gets out there thinking, oh, this will be fun, we'll playfully push each other on, and she just kicks his butt, like knocks him knocks him over the wall that goes around the rink, like just bruises the hell out of him. Like hip checks him and he falls over. So I mean, those are the two that came to mind for me.
When they're walking back to his house, he has a little tissue in his nose. And I just love it. I love the, I don't know. Whenever I think of that scene, I don't know. I remember I bought it on VHS from McDonald's.
Wait, what?
McDonald's? They had that, Wayne's World, Addams Family, and some other movies. And there was a deal where you could buy VHSs.
Did that come with a Coke?
I think so. Like, this is like, remember the Dream Team stuff they had? This was around that time when they were selling movies and Dream Team paraphernalia.
So you bought Ghost at McDonald's.
Yep.
You bought a movie that ends with a man being dragged to hell by shadow ghosts in McDonald's.
And Addams Family. And Wayne's World.
Yeah. That sounds like an interesting topic for a future pod.
What movies that Mark bought from
McDonald's.
Movies Mark bought at McDonald's.
Yeah.
What if they went to McDonald's and bought Ghost? That'd be very meta.
Oh, man. I don't even want to think about it. Okay. So it's my turn to answer this question. The first thing that came to mind is, you know those things that like couples post on the Facebook? It's like a painting class. They call it painting with a twist, I think. It's where the couples go and they kind of paint the same thing or whatever. And then at the end, they show everybody how closely they were able to draw the same thing. It's all very cutesy and just like, bleh, whatever. I think it'd be funny if Demi Moore was doing that with Ghost Patrick Swayze. Like, she would just show up to class by herself. Right? Everybody's just looking at her the whole time. It's like, what are you doing? It's like, no, don't worry. There's someone here. There's someone here. And then at the end of the class, like, there's like an actual picture there, but no one knows how I got painted. And she's just there, like, with just a huge smirk on her face, like, yeah.
And then the Predator appears.
Yeah. Whoa.
You're not Swayze.
Whoa.
I like it. Well, I so synchronized painting,
yeah,
LARPing, mm-hmm, and roller derby.
Man. I don't know.
So when they remake this movie with, who would they remake it with? Anna Kendrick and...
Zac Efron and Imogen Poots.
Yeah, there we go. Oh, there we go. And then the bad guy would be Chris Pine.
He'd actually be good for that role.
Yeah, I think he'd nail it.
Nice. All right, guys, before we continue, I think now is a perfect time to take a break, go to McDonald's, and buy some more movies. Right? You coming with me, Mark?
I'm there right now, actually. I just picked up Dancing with Wolves, which they did sell there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I picked up Wayne's World 2. For some reason, that's there as well.
All right. Wayne's World 2 and a quarter pounder of cheese. Sounds like a pretty good combo.
Swing.
All right, guys. We'll be back.
Hey guys, for you the listeners of Movies, Films, and Flicks, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. Now, if you haven't gotten into Audible yet and you're curious about it and you're listening to this podcast, I have a great book for you. It is called If Chins Could Kill, Confessions of a B-Movie Actor. It was written by Bruce Campbell, and it's about his ascent through B-movie stardom and into B-movie stardom. He talks about his work in Briscoe County. It's a cult lover's dream. Bruce Campbell is hilarious. He reads the book. He's such a self-effacing, confident, funny guy. A lot of insider gags. You'll love every second of it. So once again, If Chins Could Kill, Confessions of a B-Movie Actor, read by Bruce Campbell, you cannot go wrong. So to download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/shark. Again, that's audibletrial.com/shark for your free audiobook.
Please state your name for the camera. David.
Huh?
State your name.
David Summers.
And why are you here?
Because you think I killed them.
Killed who? Killed who, David?
My friends.
And did you?
No, 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 I didn't.
Then who did?
It doesn't matter. Because you don't believe me anyways.
For the record, please.
It killed them. All of them.
By it, you mean this man from your dreams?
No.
Then who? This looks like, right, Mr. Summers?
Yes, I do.
And according to you, by this written statement, you predicted this by way of what you call sleep paralysis.
Yes.
So if you knew, why didn't you say anything?
I tried. But it's already too late.
And what exactly happened out there, Mr. Summers?
There was something out there with us! Something that was
Mr. Summers,
here.
I ask you to calm down.
It wanted us to
David.
Die. It wanted us to suffer.
All right, that's enough.
Oh,
restrain him. Come to the table.
Coming summer of 2015, Paralyzed, brought to you by Shark Dropper Studios.
Welcome back to MFF. That was a pretty good meal. I got the number three with an apple pie and also Ghost on Blu-ray.
I got a Royale with cheese.
Oh, there we go. Did you also get Pulp Fiction? Mark, you actually went to Burger King. What movies do they sell at Burger King?
Well, they had like the they weren't quite the brand yet, so they had the sequels that went like they had like Lion King 2. They had the direct to DVD stuff or direct to VHS stuff at the time. So I got Ghost 2, Roller Derby.
Yeah.
I got Predator, Old Arnold.
Right.
And then I got Ghost 3. Painting.
Nice. Oh, did they really make my idea?
Yeah, they made it, went back in time, and it's out. It's done.
So maybe there's hope for my Anna Kendrick, Benedict Cumberbatch, Predator remake.
If there's hope in this world, it will happen.
All right. Levengood, you have another listener question for us, right?
I do. I have one more from Twitter. It's from @horrorreview_. That account name is Short Horror Reviews. Their question is, what are your thoughts on the upcoming reboot of Poltergeist? Now, this could probably be a whole podcast segment of its own, but we'll try to limit it to reactions. But yeah, I actually wrote a lot about this recently, and so since I'm loaded with opinions, I'll actually leave the floor to John and Mark to open up on this one. Feelings on the Poltergeist remake reboot.
Two words. Sam Rockwell.
Yeah, he is in it, right?
Yep, he's in it.
Hmm. Listen, it was going to happen eventually. It's here. Will it be as good as the original? No. Is Sam Rockwell in it? Oh, yeah.
You know, I think he's a big comfort for me. I like that they're kind of going with like what I'd call the Conjuring playbook. They're using a lot of actors that I recognize, a lot of reputed serious actors for a horror movie. So they had to have probably a good pitch and probably a lot of serious support in addition to just a persuasive director. The guy who did that kids movie Monster House, I think, Gil Keenan.
Oh, people loved that, didn't they?
I loved it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but that's not the guy I'd pick to do a Poltergeist remake.
But the thing is, Poltergeist was rated what, PG?
PG, that's right.
So I think a lot of kids saw that movie. So if you keep this movie, you know, around the PG-13, it might bring in a younger audience.
Well, yeah, and kids are watching horror movies at younger ages now than back then, too.
Right. I know, I feel like, I don't know if you guys will disagree with me or agree with me, but I feel like Insidious was very much a Poltergeist remake. There were a lot of parallels.
It smacked hard of Poltergeist.
Yeah, when I was watching Insidious, I was like, well, there's a lot of, they're hitting a lot of the same notes from Poltergeist, right?
Well yeah, and they refer to the Further, and the Further is in essence the other side that's referred to in Poltergeist that we never see in Poltergeist.
No, I'm not putting down Insidious. I actually loved Insidious, and I also love Poltergeist, but I couldn't dismiss that when I was first watching this movie.
I felt it hard.
Yeah, I felt like I was watching a Poltergeist remake. So I guess my feelings on an official Poltergeist remake is, well, will it be better than Insidious?
No.
That's my first question. So
I love Insidious because it's $1 million cheap Patrick Wilson wearing cardigans, Rose Byrne being a great actress, and that evil red demon who haunts my dreams. I love Insidious.
Yeah, I'm biased because Patrick Wilson is also from
St. Pete.
Yeah, basically. He's a local guy. I always support the local guys. But no, I don't know. Insidious was really well done. I had a fun time watching it. There was also some really good scares. And I think I actually like it better than Poltergeist. So, you know, the Poltergeist remake has a lot to live up to, not to the original, but to Insidious.
Basically. Sure, yeah. I mean, so many movies have borrowed from it since. Even the Paranormal Activity movies borrowed a little. The movie Dark Skies, which was based on an alien, borrowed a ton, especially the things moving around in the kitchen. I mean, yeah, it's been borrowed a lot, so now they're going to be borrowing their original canon. So the pressure's on because the movie's the same title. I mean, this movie, I have a lot of criticism. I'm honestly going to save them because a month before Poltergeist comes out, we'll probably talk about it for 30 minutes. And then after Poltergeist comes out, we'll probably talk about it for 30 minutes. So you guys can keep listening until we get there. But right now, I'll say, yeah, like Mark said, we knew it was going to get remade. And I guess, from what I've seen, I was really nervous, and then they started casting. And then I was still nervous, but I was a little comforted. And then I saw that Sam Raimi is producing, and that gave me a lot of comfort. And then I saw the trailer, and, you know, the trailer felt good. You can mislead me a lot with trailers, but things just – every bit of data that I got since my initial reaction just added comfort. So if they're going to remake it, I guess I'm glad they're remaking it the way that they appear to be doing it. And
I like what you said. You said, so it broke new ground, right? Poltergeist did. Then a lot of people stole from it. And now it has to. Now everyone's going to be like, man, that movie stole from Insidious.
Yeah. Well, you know, the funny thing is that people can say that because if you have what Poltergeist did and then Insidious or Paranormal Activity or Dark Skies borrows it with its own flavor, what if the new Poltergeist borrows what more closely resembles Insidious or Dark Skies than the original Poltergeist on which it was based?
It's a never-ending circle, right?
But
it just goes around.
But they are open to like a little bit of unusually greater criticism because instead of borrowing from Poltergeist, they're borrowing also from the pool of all the other movies that rehash similar scenes. Yeah, Mark. So, I mean, the pressure's on.
Sam Rockwell, dance battling a clown.
Okay. If they do that, then I will instantly put it over Insidious.
Do you think the world would explode?
Most of it.
Most of the world would explode. Most of the world exploded, the rest of the world would have a catastrophe that would be unsurvivable.
Like, no, I think you know Singapore would be all right. Like, just like any of the countries in the Pacific, I think they'll be all right. They're protected by that huge Pacific.
Those little islands would get tidal waved.
Sam Rockwell could save the world by dancing.
He probably could.
I feel bad for him because he's pigeonholed in every film he does. He's this great actor, but everyone's like, man, you didn't dance in that movie. But it's like, but he also danced in all his movies, so it's kind of his fault. But it's like a curse he put upon his shoulders.
Maybe he gets possessed by a ghost and he's forced to get
if I could
off.
If I could dance like him, I would have been the prom king.
Wait. Oh, absolutely. What, yeah. A step-up horror film where the people are possessed by demons and they're shaking around a lot and people think they're dancing?
Wait, that's Weekend at Bernie's Part 2 when he was, when he was reanimated with voodoo.
And whenever
the music would play, he'd get up and dance.
I love how Weekend at Bernie's 2, it just ignores the fact that he's been dead for like, for how long? And he hasn't even started decomposing yet.
Well, hey, Weekend at Bernie's 2 is the most underrated zombie movie ever because people don't recognize it as a zombie movie.
Now, did he poop?
But he might have been releasing some leftover gas. That was probably unpleasant.
Hey, guys, stay tuned for our Weekends at Bernie's Movies and Films and Flicks special.
Now being sold at McDonald's.
Yeah. All right. I think that question has been thoroughly answered. What say you guys?
I agree. I say.
Well, thank you so much for sending that question.
That was Short Horror Reviews, at Horror Review _.
All right. Awesome. All right. So before we went on break, we were discussing a series of what ifs that Mark came up with. So, Mark, what's next on your list of what ifs?
You know, for me, this next what if is something I really wanted to kind of get us out of our comfort zone. I wanted to put us out on a ledge. I wanted to put us on somewhere Tom Cruise would climb in Mission Impossible 2 and just, you know, see us in an environment we're not comfortable with answering a question about movies. So this one is, what if Jack Burton was the star of Escape from New York?
Okay. All right.
So Kurt Russell.
Yeah.
So, all right, here's what I came up with. Here's how it go down. So Jack Burton is in prison because of multiple unpaid parking tickets, right? So they mistake Jack for Snake, and he's quickly honeypotted, thank you, the interview, into a suicide mission. So, you know, Plissken is still in his jail cell, but they're dragging Jack Burton into the mission. They supply him with a knife, gun, and stealth glider. So he manages to get the glider into New York, but he crashes it into a building that actually houses the One Nice gang in New York. So he gets lucky. He constantly fails up. He pulls a great speech out of his butt, which upon later reflection makes zero sense. He's like, when the clouds pull, it's like a Hulk Hogan speech that he does, you know, that upon further reflection makes no sense. So he convinces the gang to help him on his mission, right? They attack Grand Central Station. However, Jack knocks himself out by something that would only knock him out. Like, I don't know, he throws a grenade and then the debris comes back and hits him in the face. All right, they rescue the president, and Jack drives an old 18-wheeler, of course, because he's a great driver, across the bridge, saving the day. But we find out at the end that the bad guy, the Duke, is still hanging on the back of the truck.
Oh, nice. Nice. I feel like, man, I really want to watch that movie now. I don't know. No, there was, I remember it might have been the very first episode, but near the beginning of Movies, Films, and Flicks' life, I think we discussed a theory that Kurt Russell was basically playing the same character in every movie.
That's right.
Right?
That's right. Yeah, you have Jack Burton from Big Trouble in Little China. You got Snake Plissken way down the road after he did prison time and went into Escape from New York.
Yeah.
Way back at the beginning, before he was even a trucker, he was in Overboard with Goldie Hawn. You know, it was after that relationship didn't work out that he went into the trucking. And then after he was trucking, he went to prison. So we got it all. And then Captain Ron is like when he retired. And he was just picking up an ex-military guy. They pick up a second career.
So maybe Jack Burton was already the star, right?
Wait, now, hold on, Mark. In the Jack Burton timeline, where is the thing, do you think, fall? It's like, if we ignore the chronology of when the movies were released, because we're already doing that.
I'd say it was after Overboard.
Okay.
And then after Big Trouble too.
Yeah. And, well, no, I feel like Overboard, then The Thing. Yeah, no.
It's tough to
I would say Overboard, The Thing,
And then he comes back, like, he just lives somehow, and he's like, I'm never going back to Antarctica again. Yeah. But he ends up just long-haul trucking.
See, like, I want to say that he did overboard trucking because he moved, he had to get away from his ex-wife, Goldie Hawn, from overboard. And then he did the thing, right? He found this job contracting, you know, way out in the middle of nowhere. And then after the thing, when he's jaded, because he went from a regular guy, you know, a regular dude, yeah, to like a hardened guy. Let's just pretend that he survived the end of the thing instead of freezing to death with
Keith David.
Keith David. Like, well, that's why he was so hardened and tough and escaped from New York. That's my take on it. And then Captain Ron, well, he just got into rum and island, yeah, music. So that'll solve a lot of problems. Well,
and then he found like his mojo from the early films again.
There you go. Yeah. You found that fun love again.
But I just love the visual of Jack Burton being led, and Jack Burton's like, get your hands off me. You know who I am, you blowhards. And then they walk right past Snake. And he's sitting there in his jail cell. I have a question, guys. Do you think Jack Burton pays its parking tickets?
Absolutely not.
No. I don't think he even gets parking tickets.
How many do you think he has in Big Trouble in Little China?
46 from the last 2 months. Just from, like, he opens the glove compartment. It's like that classic movie trope. You open the glove compartment, whoa, and it's just filled with tickets.
I think Jack Burton strikes me as the kind of guy as like, hey, if I don't think about it, then it doesn't exist. He's probably got like all his parking tickets, but he just doesn't think about them.
He's that's like, why I got later no parking he tickets. Went to work in the Arctic because they're like, we've got a warrant for your arrest. Come back from that Arctic center and so that we can try you in court. And he's like, you come get me.
Yeah.
Like, only person who would come get him is the thing. And then later, you know, he's in prison, so that's off the cuff. And then in Captain Ron, whenever he accumulates a bunch of parking tickets on one island, he just goes to the next island nation in the Caribbean and starts accumulating more tickets.
What does he say in Captain Ron? Hey, where are we going? Are we going to the Bahamas? No, we're going to Ted's. Where's that? It's to the left.
No. It was like, yeah, you know St. Croix?
Yeah.
Martin Short says, of course I know St. Croix. He says, we're going to the island just to the left of it.
Okay. So to put a more recent spin on this question, he made an appearance in Fast and Furious 7 as Mr. Nobody. How does he end up as Mr. Nobody, a big government official? Like, how did he get to that point?
So a lot of Belgian beer.
Exactly.
What do you think, John?
Maybe that's what he had in his truck. That's what he was transporting in Big Trouble in Little China, Belgian ale.
All of his island adventures and rum drinking and fruity drinks, you know, he started to build a gut after Captain Ron. So he joined a CrossFit box, got back in shape, wasn't drinking as much, and started talking with a bunch of CIA cronies who were ex-military operatives, just like Kurt Russell was. We'll call him for his experience in the thing, maybe, or whatever, some other job. And so he ended up joining the CIA. That's how I like to think of it. Like, CrossFit box, clean up his act after Captain Ron, new career.
Imagine after the interview. So you're telling me that you survived a thing in Antarctica, you survived a guy named Lopan, you rescued the president from New York, you went to Ted's Island,
You married Goldie Hawn after convincing a rich person to marry you when you were poor because she had amnesia because she fell off her boat.
When can you start?
Yeah, when can you start? But clearly he's good at espionage and survival.
Yep. And so, I mean, he's good. If you want criminals chasing criminals like they do with Dom.
In Overboard, he honeypotted a honeypot.
Oh. Yeah, so he honeypotted Vin with the corona.
Yeah.
Wait, are you saying that Kurt Russell pulled the first ever male honeypot?
Not only a male honeypot, but he honeypotted a honeypot. It's not like some good-looking guy finding, you know, an average girl and making her feel special in a movie like a jerk would. Like, he honeypotted the woman who isn't normally probably a honeypot. You know, this wealthy heiress. Like, and he honeypotted her. That's impressive.
It's impressive. Viva la Russell.
Yeah. I think we've answered his question. so much honeypotting.
I don't even want to talk about those about Big Trouble in Little China and Escape from New York's Kurt Russell's changing roles. I want to keep. We have gotten deeper and deeper with every episode. In a way, we have developed like a mythology of the Kurt Russell timeline.
You know what's crazy? We didn't even consider the Stargate. his time in Stargate.
That's the military background. There it is. That's the military background I was looking for.
Yeah.
For the CIA thing. That's it. That's it.
Oh my gosh.
Really, we need to do a Kurt Russell timeline episode. I want to commit now. I want to do it at some point. We're going to do a Kurt Russell timeline episode and really solidify this for our audience because we know they care about the important issues.
It feels like
start
we
writing,
just did.
Start writing the post. Start writing the post. All right. So here's the next one. This one kind of goes back to our question earlier, but I do this a lot. My wife and I, we drove to Florida recently and, we listened to World War Z. So we listened to it. I love zombie movies. I've been doing it for years. We're doing a Night of the Living Dead pod in about a month. And I just start, like, everywhere I go, I always think about zombie outbreaks. So here's my question. What if you lived in a world where every zombie outbreak happened? Every single Rage, World War Z, Night of the Living Dead, all of them happened, right? What crew would you gather to help you survive?
We can't use The Walking Dead. This has to be films.
No. Films only.
Films okay. only.
So
I'm assuming no Kurt Russell at all.
Nope.
Okay.
Nope.
Too
so
easy.
The first one I have is Tallahassee from Zombieland. Now everybody's dead. The zombies are fast. He loves Bill Murray. He looks great in a hat. He has a heart of gold, and he's kind of a jerk. That's perfect for every squad ever made.
And who doesn't want to hang out with any Woody Harrelson character anyway? Like any of his characters ever, almost.
But he's like everyone else is dead and he survived.
Yeah,
so you need him in this world.
All right.
And then I have Kenneth from the Dawn of the Dead remake, who's Ving Rhames. He's just if I saw him walking, I would follow him. He's funny. Like he plays chess with the guy across the street. He's a leader. He's a good dude. I don't know why they went to that island at the end. I feel like that was a dumb idea. I feel like they would have known that the zombies were on that island. But other than that, I think he was a pretty good leader. What'd you guys think of the Dawn of the Dead remake?
I enjoyed it. I thought it was very gritty. It was, I felt like, kind of the first modern zombie interpretation that really hit the mark. I think it lives up to the legacy.
I thought it was fun and entertaining. I guess I'll call it good, sort of. A good flick, though, not good film.
That doesn't sound like a glowing review. Doesn't sound like a glowing review.
Yeah, there was nothing good filmy about it. It was hardly even good movie, but it was definitely good flick. Absolutely good flick.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was Zack Snyder definitely got his teeth sharp on that, so... Yeah, all right, so this one, my favorite zombie film of all time is 28 Days Later, and I'm going with Selena. Because while Cillian Murphy was knocked out for the initial plague, she survived the initial onslaught of the most insane rage-infested creatures ever. Ever, right?
Yeah.
Then when he wakes up and he's being chased by all these things, she attacks the guys with a bunch of Molotov cocktails. Like, that's
that
a survival.
It was bold. Yeah, she was tough.
Like... But imagine surviving that outbreak. That seems like the worst thing ever.
Yeah, because even if you do survive, are you really feeling good about it? You know, it's like, you know, you're just screwed. Like,
yeah,
you survived, but like you're in a post-zombie apocalypse now. Like, what do you do? Like, how do you...
She fought back.
Yeah. Yeah. But now your first question is like, okay, so what am I going to do about HBO now? I don't know. They're not going to make any more Game of Thrones episodes now.
Oh, that'd be the worst.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. She's a tough one. She's a tough one. She could probably... No, I probably want her in my squad, too, watching my back.
Like, has any person survived worse odds? Maybe Jerry from World War Z. He's the next guy on my list. But I love World War Z. I think it's urgent. I think it's fun. I think it's smart. I think it always moves. It never stops. It is a perfect popcorn flick. But he survives plane crashes. He survives outbreaks. He survives swarms. He survives that weird chomping zombie. Plus, he'll, like, test diseases, drugs, cures. He'll test anything on himself to save the world. Hmm. So he's the ultimate survivor.
Yeah. No, I agree. I agree. Sounds like a pretty tough crew you got there.
Go ahead, John.
Well, I was gonna say he's also on my list. He's the one that overlaps with my list for my five.
And then, all right, so I think I have one left. So I'm going to go with Julie from Warm Bodies.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Teresa Palmer. Not only can she survive, but she can turn zombies human again. So, I mean, like, she could cure the world, right? Or at least turn enough to battle the other zombies.
Well, she discovered the cure, that if you touch their heart, that you can get them to change.
Yeah, so you want her. And then my runner-up is Lionel from Dead Alive, because he kills about 1,000 zombies with a lawnmower.
That seems so that was so Jack Burton, though. That almost seemed like it was half by luck and accident. Like,
yeah. But that's what you need, though. And then, so, John, who's on your list?
So, Jerry from World War Z, that's Brad Pitt's character. I figure he's the science-y dedicated guy. Even though we want to believe that he's doing it to get back to his family, he's also doing it to do it. He's doing it because he's dedicated. I put Brendan Gleeson from 28 Days Later. He's tough. He's no nonsense. The only way he went down was by a total fluke when a drop of blood fell in his eye from not even a zombie, but a corpse.
Is there not I think the most gangster shot of 28 Days Later is when they run up the staircases and he's in full riot gear.
Yeah, the riot gear, yeah.
Like,
oh, yeah.
That was awesome. And he just laid those things to waste.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I've got my smart, dedicated science-y guy, my super tough, no nonsense guy. My tough, compassionate guy is Arnold Schwarzenegger from Maggie, because he's the one trying to save and survive for love. And then my tricky survivor is Columbus from Zombieland. I thought about Tallahassee, but I already had enough tough people. And then from The Returned, which is a newer movie, it stars Chris Holden Reed, who is the giant lichen in the last of the Underworld movies. He's in Lost Girl, but not him, but his girlfriend, who is the researcher who is fighting for the cure for him. Not to solve the cure, but to save him. So I've got her and Arnold as my dedicated compassionates. Mm-hmm. And then I've got a smart science guy looking to solve the problem. And then I've got my tricky survivor. I got my no-nonsense powerhouse, Brendan Gleeson, who also I think of Gangs of New York. He's a tough guy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And then I guess, John Lazabeth, do you have anybody?
Yeah. I'm kind of cheating here, but I'm going with the entire cast of Shaun of the Dead.
Like, well, they can walk like zombies, right?
Yeah, I just, you know, I know if they're not the toughest, they're not the smartest, but, you know, I know if I'm hanging out with them, there will be a couple pints involved. We will be having fun at a bar somewhere. You know, like, the zombie apocalypse is looming, like, coming down on us, but at least we'll be having a fun time.
Hey, where are we going? Pub?
Yeah. We'll just go there and wait it out.
Yeah, I had him on my list. I also another rant. I had Cherry Darling from Planet Terror.
Yeah, I also had Bill Murray from Zombieland. I feel like,
why would you want him on your crew? He's gonna die.
No, I just, why wouldn't you want Bill Murray in your crew?
And he would die at the hands of someone else on your crew.
You know, whatever. At least you got to hang out with Bill Murray.
That could possibly happen.
At least you got to hang out with Bill Murray.
That's even worse than if someone on your crew dies to a zombie.
Listen, if I'm gonna go through a zombie apocalypse, I'm gonna have fun.
I guess so.
It may not be for long, but I'm gonna go out in a blaze of glory
with a bottle of Macallan in one hand,
yeah,
and a bottle of Pappy Van Winkle in the other.
I have no idea what you just said, but I'm just gonna take your word on it.
One's a beautiful Scotch and the other one's a beautiful bourbon.
Okay. I'll take your word on that.
They're heavy bottles. You could probably hit a zombie pretty good with it.
Yeah.
So our final question is really random, but listen, guys, I love the movie Forgetting Sarah Marshall. I saw it in Korea on a tiny computer, and I immediately started writing again. It just – I love it. I think it's an Apatow movie, not Apatow, but with a lot of heart. I love all the characters, and I think it's great. But then, John, you and I had a discussion once about I Still Know What You Did Last Summer – and the cheeky island there. So I started wondering, what if Jason Segel ended up on the I Know What You Did Last Summer, I Still Know What You Did Last Summer island?
Hmm.
So yeah, so the second movie, the I Still Know
What
You Did Last Summer. Okay, all right.
Okay, so, okay. I feel like in this scenario, Russell Brand's character, Aldous Snow, he's somehow hooking up with Jennifer Love Hewitt, right? just because, you know, maybe Sarah Michelle Gellar's character as well. I don't know.
Wait, she got killed in the first one.
Oh, right, yeah.
This one has Jennifer Esposito, Brandy, and Jennifer Love Hewitt.
So John doesn't still know what they did last summer. He mixed up the summers.
Too much
partying. It was all a blur.
No, but Russell Brand will somehow be sleeping with all of them. Just because.
I think he and Jack Black, you know, like they would have the same relationship that they did in Forgetting Sarah Marshall. So Jack Black from I Still Know What You Did Last Summer, his uncredited Rastafarian stoner guy. would be hanging out with Jason Segel. Somehow Wave Runners would be involved.
Right. Yeah.
So I like to think that this takes a tiny bit of a Judge Dredd turn and it gets funny, but only because of the things Jason Segel does, not the whole tone of the movie. Like, I like to think that Jason Segel, with his shameless naked humor that we see in Forgetting Sarah Marshall, when she's breaking up with him or whatever, and he's naked and he wants to talk it out while he's naked, like he's so good at that. And so I imagine that he's almost getting killed, and then he's running across the resort naked. And then he's like shaking Jennifer Love Hewitt, who he has a crush on, and trying to tell her what's wrong while he's naked. And she's not even listening to the fact that the killer's coming because he's naked. And like later, the killer will be behind someone and he'll be like, "Watch out, there's the killer." And they look over and see he's naked and they just freeze. And so they die because they don't do anything because he's running around naked the whole time. I feel like that's the movie. It's like he's inadvertently the hand of the killer
because he's just doing like selfish stuff. Like he's locking the door behind people. Like he's running away.
they're trying to make Molotov cocktails, but he drank all the liquor last night because he's depressed because he got snubbed by Jennifer Love Hewitt.
And they're like, oh, he and Jack Black go out and crash the boats because they're wasted on a night and like they have no way of getting out of the island because he and Jack Black.
after he was given a Hawaiian name like Kanunu or whatever.
I feel like at the end of the movie he ends up making one of those like puppet plays. Of the whole ordeal.
Yeah, the Dracula Die puppet musical. Yeah.
I got this scene where like the Gordon's fisherman walks into the hotel room and Jason Segel's naked and the Gordon fisherman's like, "Get dressed, we're leaving." And Jason Segel's like, "No.
No,
like, get dressed. No." Like, because like if I get dressed, I'll have to leave this room. And the guy's like, "Get dressed, no!" And then like all the other characters, General Philip Hewitt, all them just hear this screaming match in the background, going, "Yes, no, yes, no!" Like this, is the Gordon, this fisherman, and a naked guy yelling, and that gives them time to escape.
Right. No, I think I want to see this movie now.
We've covered a lot of different angles of Jason Segel infiltrating I Still Know What You Did Last Summer.
I just like that he and Jack Black get drunk and wreck all the boats.
That's when they drank all the liquor that then couldn't be used for Molotov cocktails.
Yeah, exactly.
You imagine like someone specifically runs to the bar thinking they'll make a Molotov cocktail to solve this problem and kill this killer. And there's nothing there for them to work with. And the killer just stabs them.
Yeah.
Or the karaoke, he's doing a karaoke scene of his own songs, and then that I Still Know What You Did Last Summer pops up on the karaoke screen. He just freaks out.
Yeah.
You know, who's messing with me? Oh, man. I want a jet ski involved somehow. How would a jet ski be involved?
Literally, Paul Rudd's character. A jet ski drive-by stabbing.
Like everyone's looking at him like, no, wait. So there's two jet skis and they're kind of playing chicken. He comes out of the crowd waving his hands naked. They all look at him. And then the Gordon's fisherman decapitates the person. So there's my what ifs, guys.
I can just imagine the post for that. The fisherman is riding a jet ski chasing Jason Segel, who's also on a jet ski.
You know, I hate jet skis, but in bad movies, I think they're pretty good.
Right. All right. I think where that does it for Mark's what ifs. Am I right, Mark?
Yeah, I feel like they took us to some interesting places.
That was a successful what if scenario. Reminds me of those what if comic books from the 80s.
Hey, guys, answer this question for me. What if we had plugs? What do you say to that?
I would say I'd like to thank at Demon Scribblers, Isaac's Haunted Beard, and Short Horror Reviews for their questions from Twitter.
Right. What if Mark had any plugs?
I'd like to thank you, John Lazabeth.
Oh, thank you. That's the first time anybody's ever thanked me. actually.
Yeah, and we should give a shout-out. John Lazabeth represents the Shark Dropper producers that help us with our show and brought us into the fold.
Yeah, it's all heartwarming moment right now. It feels kind of weird. I don't know.
You should have heard the conference call we had earlier.
Oh, yeah. It's all business now. It's weird.
It was a lot of geeky love.
Yeah. I don't know.
A lot of geeky love.
All right, guys. So, as always, check out moviesfilmsandflicks.com. Check out sharkdropper.com. Check out.
And guys, sorry, I know I'm interrupting, but if you guys like this podcast and Shark Dropper's podcast, go online, rate it, review it, check out Shark Dropper's other stuff. But yeah, just give us your feedback. Give us your questions. We want to know more about you guys.
Yeah. Check out McDonald's.com to see what movies they're currently selling this month. The. Right. Oh man, this idea just struck me. What if they made Happy Meals for adults, and the toy that you get was actually a DVD?
Oh my gosh!
Wouldn't that be amazing?
I'd be there all the time.
And the Happy Meals beverage is a beer. And you choose. You get two options. Like instead of like, I want a Diet Coke or I want a lemonade, you get a Corona or a Belgian Ale.
Don't McDonald's? I could be completely wrong about this, but don't McDonald's in European countries sell alcohol?
Oh yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
So that's a true thing.
Yeah.
All right. Well, next time I go to Europe, I'm going to go to McDonald's because apparently that's what you do.
And get a Belgian beer or a Corona. But you have to drink the Corona like Vin Diesel does in the Fast movies, which I don't know.
You just hook your index finger around it, and then you turn the bottle upside down until there's nothing left.
Now that I think about it, I don't think a Corona would go great with anything from McDonald's.
But first you have to say a prayer. No, yeah. You have to say grace. You have to say grace first.
Because you reach for the food first. Yep. All right. For my co-host, Mark Hoffmeyer.
Peace, love, jet skis.
And John Lemongood.
Wishing you farewell from John's Horror Corner headquarters, which is just a couch.
Yeah. No, it looks pretty comfy. I've been your host, John Lawswolf. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you guys next time.
Seconds till shark drop. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Drop the shark. Go, go, go.
This podcast is a Shark Dropper Studios production.